Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Elizabeth Rapp. And you're listening to Bad Guys at the
Movies. Oh my goodness.
All right.
Woo! Anyways, Elizabeth, she's a little tired today.
I am tired.
We've had Elizabeth on in the past. It's great to have her back. Everyone also always remembers her. We'll go through this real quick after we get through the paperwork. But this will give you a chance to wake up, go get some coffee or something, and get some blood rushing through your body. But you can get before we talk to Elizabeth and remind everybody where she's from and what she does, you can go to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com. You can go to iTunes and search us for Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network. Pop right up. You can get the show. Subscribe to this or any of the podcasts on the Fat Guys Network. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM or email us at fit guys. It's totally not fit guys. It's fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We do have a listener email to talk about, and we have a voicemail, 740-205-6456. We have a listener voicemail to talk about as well, and we are going to start a new thing. If you go to the Fat Guys page at fatguysatthemovies.com, it's not there yet because I'm lazy and I haven't put it up there yet, but we're going to have a donate button. If you really want to help us out, and you can go ahead and click it and donate us money, and we can use it to propel the show into awesomeness, beyond the awesomeness we already are at, or we'll just pay for the hosting. anyways, Elizabeth, welcome back to the show. I think this is what, your fourth time?
I think it's my fourth. Yeah, I was just counting it up. Yeah, fourth. Yeah.
Because we were both on the Golden Briefcase's 100th episode, because we've both hosted or been the guest on that show three times in the past, I think, and then they decided not to have us break the tie and had us on at the same time.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, tons of fun.
It was. I feel like we let people down almost, like they expect, but I don't know. Maybe that's
fight?
Extreme, like, low self-esteem. No,
that's what happens when you get an aggressive personality like me.
Because, it was fun, then I'm like, oh, it should have been more fun. Like, what the, you know. Yeah.
I think it was fun. I think they wanted, it was like we were joking because it was going to be a big smackdown, but they didn't, there was nothing to smack down about.
I know, it was like the easiest topic ever, you know, it was like, yeah. Oh yeah, we can all agree on icons of cinema, like,
yeah.
It wasn't,
you
like,
to say,
nobody's going to argue, like, Luke Skywalker, no, that's not an icon.
Darth Vader, what?
Yeah.
James Bond.
What are you smoking?
Yeah. So, Elizabeth, remind everybody where you are, what you do, and that sort of thing. So,
I write weekly at film.com, and then I have occasional pieces that pop up now at the Spectator Arts blog. I seem to be their video game person at the moment. There should be like a big Mass Effect article coming out when I finally beat Mass Effect 3.
Is it like, I'm working?
I know. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I have to finish playing this game. Like, you know, I tell people, you know, my parents and my family that, like, you know, I have to carve out some time to finish. But yeah, I just play really slow, and I get, like, really worked up about, you know, certain things in that game and, like, the romance angles, and I have to, like, you know, sleep on it.
Wow. See, this is why I don't do video games. It's just so complicated. I'm like, I don't have the energy. I have barely enough energy to get through my own personal life.
Well, see, I don't have a personal life, so I'm like, you know, I was actually, and, you know, it's one of those things, like, you start, and I usually know my audience fairly well as far as, like, what I talk about in, you know, real life. But I found myself launching into this whole discussion with one of my bosses at a real world job, and about like what romance option I should pick in Mass Effect. And I'm like, and she's looking at me, and I'm like, I'm not catching the cues. And I'm like, well, I mean, like, the alien has been with me since my very first mission, and I mean, he's had my back, and I'm trying to make it like a joke, like, anyway, that's what I've been doing. I was just trying to show you how crazy and nerdy it gets, and, you know, like, involved somebody gets in the game, and I'm like, oh my god.
And she's like, oh, do you like the Olive Garden, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was just, yeah, it was really awkward. And I did, I was like, you know, kind of tossing and turning about, oh, I don't know which love interest to pick. Like, because, you know, you're kind of stuck in a quandary by game 3 if you've been sleeping around your ship the way I have.
You're a Randy person online.
I'm like, why can't I have both of them? I don't, I mean,
you know what's funny is
Commander Shepard to be a free-loving kind of commander.
Well, it's good that you have a progressive attitude towards video games.
It's the future.
Characters.
If you can't have, like, more than one boyfriend in the future, then what good is it? What are we working towards?
Let's kick it all now. Let's just... finish it all up.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny is because you're there playing video games. I watch movies as you do too. But like I was watching Anchorman this week for something I was writing for Film School Rejects, and my 3-year old keeps running around and interrupting. And it's so funny because I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm working. Quiet. And then I turn back to the TV, and they're like, oh.
Yeah, those aren't kids with like values.
Great Odin's
like...
beard.
Yeah. I think that'll be really cute. I'm not like, because you're a good parent. I just think that'll be really funny if they grow up and they're like watching TV and they've never learned to separate. It's like their girlfriend's like, or their wife, you know, you need to take out the trash. I'm working.
You're watching TV. Well, this is what Dad did.
Yeah. I think
he never loved me.
Yeah. It'll be great.
I am raising him that way because last week there were the guests on the show and we saw Wrath of the Titans and Mirror Mirror. Obviously, what's really funny about that is when I have my kids on the show, they actually usually end up seeing more movies in advance than a lot of the other guest hosts that I have.
Yeah, I haven't seen... I don't know what happened to my Allied list, but I haven't gotten any advance notices in a while. I don't get what's going on. They keep...
They heard you were sleeping around on spaceships. That's
well, yeah, I was like, you know, hey, guys, I'm sorry. I was saving the universe again. And I it's so sad.
Women's
like,
work
I come
is
up,
never
I,
done.
I get up every morning and I'm, like, feeding the parrot and I... People
for those listening, she actually has a parrot.
Yeah.
This is not a euphemism.
No,
for anything.
It's not a euphemism.
She actually has,
despite my active space sex life. And I'm like feeling because people have been.
You do realize
me.
I'm going to start using feeding the parrot as a. I'm going to be like, well, yeah, I was feeding the parrot
feed
the other.
The parrot.
What does that mean? I have no idea.
But yeah, people who follow me, I'm sure, have like figured out there's been stuff going on in my family. But so I get up early and I'm telling my mom, like, yeah, so I lost the Asari Homeworld last night. And she's like, oh, like, again, I'm misjudging my audience terribly.
That's a shame.
Yeah, that's a shame. You know.
We're going to be going to a break here because we almost burned this whole out, this whole segment out, talking about this is what we do every time. That's why I can only have you on every couple months because God knows what would happen to the show.
Just devolve into madness.
It would turn into madness. But anyways, when we come back, we're going to talk about Titanic 3D, in which the boat sinks again, this time. In 3D. And with that, we will leave you with the trailer.
Titanic was called the Ship of Dreams. And it was. It really was.
All right, open your eyes.
Do not let go of my hand!
I'll never let go.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We have Elizabeth Rapp here, and we're going to talk a little bit about Titanic in 3D. Titanic. So, it is out in 3D. It actually came out on Wednesday. I thought about going to see it, but I've seen Titanic a couple times. And then I looked at the running time, and it's 3 hours and 14 minutes, which I knew it was that long.
Did you know it was released on the day that the Titanic sailed from Southampton? That they re-released it on that day?
Yeah, it was the 15th.
Yeah.
That it sinks.
I thought they re-released it on the sinking day, and I was like, tacky, but I guess they re-released it on the sailing day.
Yeah, I guess that's, yeah, it's less tacky to be like, yay, 12,000 people died, woohoo.
Hey, a moment of silence for those that died on the Titanic.
12,000. I got my facts way wrong. apparently, an alien ship landed on Titanic right before it sank, and they deposited like 10,000 other people on the ship. And been like, oh, you guys can handle it. Oh my God,
some of them were some of our my alien friends. It was all my Mass Effect characters.
Yeah, all the people you had sex with on your spaceship. That's what it was.
They're
like returning you to Earth. They're like, where's Elizabeth? What? Crash. Oh, no.
Nobody's going to let them on a lifeboat. They're not human.
Why? Yeah. Women and children. Nobody's in anything about these aliens.
Yeah.
Anyways, are you a fan of Titanic?
You know, I kind of wax and wane on it. When it came out, I saw it, I think, twice at the theater. I think only twice. I don't think I went three times.
Well, you were like a teenager when it came out.
Yeah, I was adding it up, and I was 15, almost 16.
Oh, so you were totally target market. Did you have posters of Leo in your room?
You know, no, I didn't because, I totally got caught up in it. It's weird because I was a fat teenager with really bad acne. So you'd think I would have been the target demographic, but really I just sort of was like, this could never happen to me. Like,
of course, because it happened in 1912. What are you talking about?
And yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio wasn't my type. I know I reenacted like the scenario, as Rose would say, I counted up the lifeboats in my head. I kind of, you know, got into like the romance and like if I was, you know, on Titanic and fell in love, but I always recasted it with somebody else. In fact, yeah. I had a crush on the guy who played the
David Warner.
No, the one guy who goes back. It was played by Ewan Griffith, who is Mr. Fantastic from the Fantastic Four movies. And
oh yeah, yeah.
That was like his first movie or something, and he's the guy that goes back and rescues Rose. And I had, so I kind of liked him, and I was like, man, if I was writing Titanic, I would have put him as the male love interest. So yeah, that's my experience. It'd be, I don't know, there was just something I found it very alienating because I was like an ugly kid, so I didn't.
Everyone's so beautiful in this.
Yeah,
what's going on?
Exactly. I'm like, I don't fit into this world.
Here's a true story about when I saw Titanic. I saw it with my wife, and we'd been married. Well, I guess it would have been about a year that we'd been married. We were close to our 1 year anniversary, and we're waiting. And this is before I did any sort of movie review, so I actually waited in line with all the unwashed masses. I was like, see, now I'm like that first class passenger going on a Titanic,
yeah,
just walking.
You are.
Oh, don't you know who I am? Bow to me. Whereas back then I was all the Irish people in the bilge
you were the dirty Catholics they let sink.
So I was literally waiting to, we were this big huge line because I didn't see it right away, so it'd been a week or a couple weeks it had been out, and we were just like, fine, let's go see it. So we're waiting in line, and it's just a huge just sea of couples. And I'm there with my wife, and we're standing there, and everyone's, you know, politely just talking quietly. Because in the old theater that we were at, they had the theaters right there. It's not as expansive as the theaters used to, the theaters are now once they started doing the stadium seating and everything. And I say, top of my voice, I go, there better be some breasts in this movie, or I am going to be really PO'd. And you talk about how genders attitudes are very different.
Yeah.
Every single woman in line, and my wife was just mortified, hiding her face. Every single woman who was in line was like, oh,
I'm glad I don't have that.
What's going on? And all the guys were like, kind of got a point there. I'm going to sit through 3 hours.
I agree.
I better see some of that. and when they have the sketching scene.
Did you actually mean for people to hear it, or was it just one of those moments where everything went quiet as you said it? Because that's always what happens to me.
No, I totally meant everybody to hear it.
Okay, cool.
I was going for the laughs. And when they do have the sketching sequence where you do get to see breastilages, I felt like standing up and going, yeah, but I didn't. I figured I embarrassed my wife enough at that time.
That's great. You know, it's weird because I had seen movies with nudity in it before. For some reason, that movie made me very uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it was just the whole...
Was it the intimacy of it?
Yeah, kind of the whole display. angle. That, and I remember that the second time my sister and I saw it, she was like, those are obviously James Cameron's hands. And it was like, oh. Like,
she was, oh, I don't all of a sudden it got really creepy.
Yeah, it was suddenly like, those are an old man's hands drawing her. But yeah, it was, I don't know. I just, yeah, I thought that whole scene was just too much when I was like 15.
Wow. It overwhelmed you.
Yeah, I was like, there better be some ass cheeks in this
one. Nice. Oh, remember, we're on the radio.
Now, that's something I would say now. I'd be like, there better be some dick in this movie.
Whoa, we're on the radio. See, now you must have listened to some old shows when other people have like said, oh, they decided to swear in the middle of the second.
I was like, not sure. Like, I should have, like, we can edit, okay. You can edit that part out.
I will bleep that out. That might not show up on the radio.
But yeah, it was, I don't know. I did like the movie. I mean, it's like, I remember being kind of, because they pretty much spoil. I mean, not. I'm not joking. They spoiled the ending.
The boat sinks. We all know that.
But I want to say that I did know DiCaprio was, spoiler alert, going to die at the end. But I don't remember who had spoiled it or how it got spoiled exactly. Because I remember like really sitting on the edge of my seat, going, "Oh, this is where he's going to die," or "This is where he's going
to
die."
Yeah, I don't think we can, like, it's okay to say what happens in this movie. I think
it's pretty.
15
yeah.
years old. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you haven't seen it by now. But yeah, it's so weird because I remember actually thinking that he, and I still think that would actually been like a really depressing and more realistic edit if I was making Titanic. It's like when they actually,
yeah, because obviously Cameron had no idea what he was doing. That's when it made no money.
When they get separated, when the boat initially goes down. And she's like reaching for him. I thought that was when he died. I remember at the theater going like, oh my gosh, like. And then he came back, and I was like, oh, I guess he's not going to die. Like, I remember thinking, everybody fooled me. And then, of course, he freezes to death.
Curses.
But yeah, that actually would have been kind of cool, because he would have gone down with the ship, and then Rose would have been like, not ever. And people wouldn't say that Rose, let him die. Because everyone's like, she should have moved over and given him a piece of wood.
Well, no, they do. Well, well, that already happened in the car. But no, I'm here all week. But anyways, he does try to climb on the door.
Yeah, and it sinks.
It starts to capsize, and she's like, no. And he's like, no, you stay there.
I mean, I remember as a kid thinking, they could have taken turns.
They could have taken turns. you're analyzing this.
But they would have, I mean, you start getting really stiff, and yeah.
Well, in terms of this, let's just give it a real quick fat guy's grade. I thought Titanic rocked. I mean, I saw, like I said, I've seen it a couple times. I have not seen the 3D conversion. I'm curious, but I kind of was like, well, do I have to pay full price? Can I just pay $2 and go watch like a half hour of it?
Yeah, you know? I kind of don't want to see the whole thing in 3D. Like, there's just a curiosity angle. Like, I'd kind of like to see bits of the end in 3D more than like I don't want to see, you know, them drinking tea and eating.
I'm sure when
they
go underwater to swim in the opening, when they're underwater, that's probably really cool in 3D. And then when the first sails, and of course when it sinks. But yeah, there's a lot of walk and talk scenes that I really care about.
Well, I kind of, you know, the one segment I always hated, and I still hate it. I mean, because I wax and wane on the movie a lot. But if there's one chunk of it I wish I could cut, it's the whole up and the down and the, you know, the water's rushing here and the water's rushing there and now they're locked in here and then there's the gun. I mean, if I could cut that whole part out, I'd probably go see it in 2D, 3D, you know. Like, I don't need to see them, racing around the ship, you know, because he's
running.
I mean, there's just so much that this, even at the time, like, the first time, of course, you're, like, getting, but you're just waiting for the sinking scene. Like, you just, that's what you want to see, even though that makes you feel bad inside. Like, I want to see all those people die.
with that note, we're going to have to go to a break, but I want to play the trailer for the next film, which is American Reunion, and which the gang from American Pie return for their 13th year high school reunion, and more crazy shenanigans happen.
Yeah.
The reunion, you in? Seems like everyone's actually going.
Hey guys, you made it.
What's up, class of 99ers?
We're gonna party together.
Hell yeah.
Just like old times.
Cheers.
Looks like a high school party.
with high school chicks.
I love the Twilight books. New Moon is my favorite.
Mine too.
Oh my God, it's like we have so much in common.
Tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment where now Elizabeth can actually swear if she chooses.
And I won't.
And you won't. Now you're like, now I'm embarrassed.
I am embarrassed.
She was all dick and ass in the last segment, and I'm like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to edit that out for Wyoming Radio.
I never think of, like, either of those as being, like, cuss words, so, yeah.
Well, it's Wyoming Radio.
I know.
Let's just put it that
it's
way.
True. I'm surprised we're allowed to talk about Titanic and dirty Catholics.
Well, you notice that I said breasts, and I'm not allowed to say boobs because apparently some people find those offensive. Not me.
Not me.
Dude, I love me some boobs.
See, it's weird that, like, we all have our words for, you know. Because you say boobs. I never say boobs. I always say tits. I don't know
You say
why.
Tits, because that's so much more respectful.
I think it's because I'm always tits? Referring to my own, and I'm like, I'll call them what I want.
They're my tits. Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Is it a size issue? Is that why you don't want to refer? I mean...
I think so. I mean,
what is your cup size? I'm just going to lay it out here on the table.
You're going to lay it out. It's I'm a plumb line. There is no
a plumb line. There's a that means something.
No, I would say I'm a what is it? I'm a 32A, unless I get it padded, like a padded push up, you know, triple whatever. Like they put Jason Statham's girlfriend in on the ads. Then I can have, like, a B.
you can work it all the way up to a B.
Yeah. It's pretty embarrassing.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, no, not embarrassing. It's one of the things is, like, because I'm usually wearing, like, padding or, some kind of push-up or, you know, and a lot of times your clothes just aren't fit. I mean, I don't really work, you know, where I've worked, I don't really show cleavage or anything. And so it's been really awkward, like, when we did, like, some Shakespeare once at work, or I go to the Renaissance Fair, and people are like, that's all you have? And I'm like, yeah.
Really? They come out, they lead with that? They're like,
oh, yeah.
What?
I've had I never was all that embarrassed about it until some guy, it was, like, my first semester of college, and don't, like, infer that I'd, like, taken off my top or anything. We were just talking, and I... Remember how, like,
talking
and he's just,
in
he's
air
just, he
quotes.
Looks at, we're just having lunch, and he's looking me up and down and goes, yeah, you're going to have to find a sugar daddy if you ever, like, and get implants if you ever hope to, you know, meet a guy. And I was like, thanks.
What world is this? What sort of misogynistic, weird porno world
know.
Does he live in?
It was
where
really...
he's like, well, you know, if you're going to be happy, you're going to have to get a sugar daddy or
yeah.
get some implants.
And I'm like, how do I get a sugar daddy if I don't have big boobs? I mean, it was sort of like one of those things.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, you're a small lady. You're not like
yeah,
tall.
Yeah, I am small.
You're not like it's. There's a huge difference. I will say this from an expert of the female form, at least from an observer's perspective, is a big difference. If you're like 5'2" and 100 pounds, having an A cup is very different than if you're like 6 foot.
Yeah.
And 300 pounds and have an A cup. It's a huge difference.
Well,
you know?
I was definitely, like, heavier when I, you know, started college and stuff. So I had much more of, like, a half an hourglass. Like, it was, you know, the poetic way of saying it is that you're pear-shaped, but, you know, really you just have a big butt. And I am sort of more straight up.
Nothing wrong
and,
with that either.
Yeah, well, I'm more straight up and down now. I'm still half an hourglass, but I'm a little more comfortable in my... And it is kind of nice because, you know, I don't really have to... wear a lot of undergarments or anything like that. And it was kind of, I think the best thing I ever got to.
Sorry.
It's true, though.
I'm like, just thinking of more questions at this point.
Hey,
the hell
away.
With the box office. The hell with Titanic and American Reunion. Let's talk about your undergarments.
Well, it's like, you know, you don't really have to wear a bra because nobody notices. Like, you know.
I'm sure your parrot doesn't when you're quote unquote feeding the parrot.
Well, no, you know, it's actually kind of terrible because, well, that's actually a joke around our house, because like anytime I've held the puppies or the bird, and I'm like, the bird wants to always go down my shirt because he likes to ride around in pockets and things, and I'm always like, don't tear off what I've already got.
Personally, I'm a big fan of holding the puppies sometimes.
Well, like I.
Oh wait, we're talking about dogs. Hold on a second.
Well, don't my like pugs. You can't. I mean, this is completely off the subject, but you can't trim like a pug's.
Wait a minute. Wait a hold on a second. What subject are you talking about? We're completely off the subject anyway.
I know. Well, I once had to try to hold Elliot down while we trimmed his toenails, and you can't trim pug toenails. You just can't. It's like a rule. And but we tried, and he tore my chest to ribbons. And I remember, like, afterward, like, we tried this terrible experiment, and I just looked at myself, and I was like, there goes half my cup size.
You're like, you were a C cup before that yeah. whole incident.
Now I'm an A.
That's hilarious. Well, thank you for opening up to us. Yeah. I don't know how we swerved into that conversation.
It's because, like, American Pie with boobs in your head and Titanic.
Well, yeah.
There's just lots of boobs in this.
Of American
week.
Reunions. Let's talk about American Reunion then, and American Pie. Do you like the American Pie movies at all?
You know, I'm gonna, like, totally get shamed. I've never seen them.
Really?
Yeah. You know what it was is when the first one came out, I don't remember if I was just on like a medieval Renfare kick probably, and I didn't see it. And then by the time like it was out on DVD, everyone had ruined the jokes for me. Like, it was one of those. Like, I was like, let me quote the entire movie to you. And I was like, I don't need to see it now, you know? Yeah. Like, everybody was doing...
You knew Finch banged Stifler's mom.
Yeah, I mean, it was just I don't... Yeah, so it's like they've been recited to me endlessly.
Say my name, bitch.
And I never got to... Like, so I've seen them in the sense of I've seen people reenact them for me. Like, let me do the joke about band camp. And it's like, okay. You know? Yeah. And I get compared to Allison Hannigan a lot.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not in the movies necessarily, but, like, people said, oh, you look like her.
You're both redheads. You know.
Yeah, kind of way-faced.
You both have an A cup.
Yeah,
at least
much.
That's what I'm thinking.
I remember at the time, like, because I didn't have it in context, and I was like, I don't get the band camp joke. But and somebody like just blatantly was like, well, she, and I was like, oh, well, now I get it. Like,
you can say she sticks a flute in her pussy. That's you're allowed to say that.
Yeah, okay.
This segment.
But all anybody would ever say was, you know, one time at band camp, and I was like, I do not get this joke. And they were like, because she sticks a flute in it. I was like, oh, God, all right.
The joke's more than that, because everything she says in the movie is
totally
one
dorky.
Time,
yeah.
One time at band camp, everything's a band camp story to her. And I just recently watched all of them because I got they re-released them on Blu-ray. I think they've probably been on Blu-ray.
Yeah, there's
before,
so many movies that aren't on Blu-ray. But the American Pie.
Well, they're obviously doing it because American Reunion is out this week. Yeah. So I've seen all of them, like all within a 24-hour period. And let's put it this way: as far as fourth movies go, it could be a lot worse. I thought the first one was very funny. I thought the second one kind of sucked. The reason the second one kind of sucked is if you look at the thing, the first movie's about them losing their virginity. The third movie's about them getting married. The fourth movie's about a big high school reunion. The third movie's about having a party. So the parties, that just doesn't have a good reason to be there. It just was one of those excuse sequels. And the third movie's okay. It has its moments, but it's not as fresh as the first one. And it's kind of what I think about American Reunion. It has some funny bits in it. But one of the problems when you have an ensemble comedy, because that's really what the first one was, because you had three guys, three girls, then you had Jim's dad. You know, so you had all these characters, just 8 or 10 characters that you're following. You try and give them, everybody gets everything in a sequel, as much as you can, and they got everybody back for the sequel. The problem is that, well, they may not all fit together story-wise so well. And so it's really Jim and, what's Allison Hannigan's character's name? Drawing a blank. Michelle. Jim. It's kind of Jim and Michelle's story. The thing is, there's some very awkward humor, not in a good awkward way, just jokes that you're just like, oh, that feels like...
You went with that one?
Yeah, you might want to put that in the Three Stooges next week. And then there's also, but see, there are some very funny scenes. Of course, all the funny scenes, I'm just going to warn you, are courtesy of Stifler and Jim's dad. When they're not on screen, it's not all that interesting of a movie.
Yeah.
So it's funny, and if you're these crazy American Pie fans who, you know, are just going to laugh at anything they do, you're going to love it.
Are but there crazy American Pie fans? Like, I mean, the way there are, like, the maybe Twilight fans or Hunger Games fans.
I mean, they're
fans.
Not wearing, they're like Team Stifler or anything like that, but they're, but there are people who are big fans of the series. At least there were at the screening I went to.
Hmm.
It wasn't very crowded, but but there is a certain amount of, you don't realize it's been like 9 years since the last movie.
See, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I was like getting into college or just graduating from high school, and yeah.
Yeah, because 2003 was American Wedding, and okay. American Pie was 1999.
Oh, well, there you go. See, I was just getting out of high school, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is one of those things that they're coming, they do come back, but it does have that sort of Two Jakes feel to it, where just kind of like, now you're doing a sequel. And it's funny, but I mean, the target audience is now in their 30s.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, the first movie, and I mean, even though I didn't see it, I wasn't on a Ren Faire kick. I was on X-Files kick. That's why.
There you go.
I was on a new level of nerddom. But it's like, I remember at the time, like, the humor was so shocking. I remember even my friend's parents going, oh my God, yeah, I thought Porky's was bad. And,
yeah.
You know, and at the now you've kind of ramped it up in the years after that. I mean, you've had, like, The Hangover, and you've had lots of full frontal male nudity in the Jason Segel movies, and I don't know, yeah. Just some of it's what was shocking then about, like, the apple pie and the flute is not exactly shocking now. Not when you have, like, naked Asian guys jumping at Bradley Cooper's face and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
They don't have any trannies in this movie like they did in The Hangover 2.
Yeah.
So.
Which they probably should have. I mean, you know, when you want your movie to make, like, triple billion, they should have set in Bangkok and had, like, some tranny hookers. See, I should be a Hollywood executive. Like, I would,
American,
God, I'd be rolling in money right now.
They could call it Bangkok Pie.
Yeah, Bangkok Pie.
And it could star John Cho, because he's now, like, famous. He's, like, has a name behind him. And they're, whereas back when they were making the first American Pie, he was just the Asian dude.
Yeah.
He was the Asian MILF guy.
And now he's the one that has a career. He's like, hello, I have, you know, a franchise of my own.
Oh, they definitely use him more in this movie than they ever have in any other ones. But, I mean, it's exactly what you'd expect. It's not terribly funny. It's probably, of the sequels, it's probably the best of the three sequels. But it still doesn't hold a candle to the first one. The first one was very fresh and original, and it felt good. And, you know, that's what's going on there.
Yeah. Are you counting? Are they? Because there were, like, spinoffs in between, like, with, like, Jim's dad, the spinoff.
They did the spinoffs with Stifler's brother going to college.
Yeah.
That was Beta House, and they did Band Camp, and they did The Naked Mile. But those were more like those National Lampoon straight to video crap. They're technically part of the series, but they're really not, because they don't follow any of the main characters.
It's either, I guess it's like, yeah, it has such a vast mythology. I'm not surprised there's, like, massive fans of it then, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
so, I don't
know.
I mean,
the events of, you know, The Naked Mile directly
they're like, the consistency in those movies just don't work out. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
So anyways, I'm going to say American Reunion kind of rocks. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks because it did make me laugh. There are some fun. I did laugh in this movie. And it's not wall-to-wall awesomeness, but, you know, it's worth checking out if you like those films. It's the best I could say.
Fair enough.
Let's talk about last week's box office. The Hunger Games won again, which I kind of figured, because even with its huge 61% drop, it still made almost $60 million. And Wrath of the Titans came in somewhat soft at 33.5, and Mirror Mirror came in at 18.
Oh, my God.
Which was not good. That was not a good movie.
I'm so behind. The last movie I saw at the theater was The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, so, you know. Yeah. I know, now it's on DVD.
it's better than Wrath or Mirror Mirror. Yeah. So, I mean, it was predictable what it was. I think they wanted more for Wrath, but I just didn't think...
It felt like that was such an afterthought of a sequel. It's like, oh, that's out? Yeah. You know, it was really, it's weird. It's one of those, it almost feels like it should have just been direct-to-video or something. Strange.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big enough budget. It's a big enough movie. If you see it, there's a spectacle there, but it just, I don't know, the heart wasn't in it. I mean, even though the first movie was kind of dopey,
The Hunger Games that's about is not going to leave us.
What do you think is going to win this weekend? Do you think the Hunger Games is going to win
think
again?
I think the Hunger Games will probably trump again, because I know a lot of people, you know, it just seems like it's been, you know, people are checking it out of curiosity. I mean, it's kind of catching up that second, like, what's this Hunger Games stuff about? Yeah. Or people that were just too busy to see it or wanted to avoid the fan tween crowd, so...
Yeah, right now the early box office is predicting that Titanic made $4.5 million on Wednesday.
We are talking about Titanic. Yeah, I think Titanic could trump it, but I could still see Hunger Games coming out number one and Titanic like coming out as a really close two. It sort of depends like if you can catch that, if the Hunger Games audience is bored, like the young girls, and they're like, I feel like some Titanic.
Yeah. I think that could work. I think the one thing that's going to be interesting to the crowd is it's Good Friday this weekend. So you got the whole Easter weekend. You know, so it's technically a 3-day weekend, and you're going to get I don't think there's not a whole lot of Easter celebrations to necessarily suppress box office.
Yeah.
So, but I would imagine
segments of the population probably suppress going to the movies on Easter, but
yeah,
not many, not anymore.
But you're still looking. Hunger Games is probably still going to be cranking in somewhere around the 30 million mark for the weekend for the 3-day, which means that I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it could beat American Reunion.
It'll beat American Reunion. It's can it beat Titanic?
I think it will.
I'm not sure that there's a lot of awareness that Titanic. I don't know. Maybe I'm just totally buried under a rock. It just doesn't seem like a lot of people are really aware it's coming back out, except maybe on the internet. I don't know.
I mean, $4.5 million on a Wednesday is not bad.
No,
trust me. And then you've got the whole weekend to deal with. They're saying 20 to 30 in the 20s, or maybe even 30 million by the end of the weekend. Which, if you factor out Wednesday's and Thursday's numbers, you're looking at 20 million tops.
I think what kind of surprises me is I was really expecting to see, you know, on social networks and stuff, a lot of, because the whole costuming thing has gotten so big and people kind of making a big deal about it. And I mean, people were dressing up for Hunger Games like crazy. My feed was just full of, look at my Katniss costume. Yeah. And so I'm really kind of surprised that, because I was expecting to see that with Titanic, or kind of curious to see if people were putting together costumes.
Titanic just doesn't seem like a cosplay kind of
movie. Well, they're all cosplay movies now. That's the kind of crazy part of it. I mean, I don't know. It's gotten really crazy. It's like any movie that has any kind of costume, somebody's dressing up as it somewhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And there's like a fan club and stuff. So I really kind of thought the Titanic would kind of have caught that again, but it doesn't seem to. Maybe... Yeah, I don't know. Girls didn't plan ahead or something. They're like, oh, it's out. Now I don't have time to make a rose costume.
It's a little more expensive to do that, to whip together.
It's kind of, you know, amazing. Like, some of them just, like, safety pin that stuff together. It's interesting. Oh, yeah.
Although I think a rose costume would be a little harder to... Unless they go as Rose just with a necklace and naked.
Maybe they will.
and you know what? See, I'm from Ohio, and when people do that... They usually look like me, and no one wants to see that.
Oh, cosplayers come in all shapes and sizes, and
they do.
It seems like there's no limit. Like now, you go to Comic-Con and you just see people dressed as everything. Like any movie, ever that you can think of somebody's walking around as. It's like not even
so
just
like, I'm dressed as, as Chris Matthews. You're yeah. like, what? That's cosplay now? Chris Matthews?
Cabin Boy? I mean, it's just, yeah, it's all kinds of.
No, Chris Matthews from MSNBC.
I know. But not even Chris Evans. Well, that just made me think of Cabin Boy, which means somebody's out there dressed as Cabin Boy.
I mean, Cabin Boy at least makes sense. I could totally dress as Cabin Boy.
I'm dressed as Rachel Maddow.
Just, yeah. What?
Where, yeah, then maybe people go like the whole MSNBC team, and then they're like posing, and everybody's like taking their picture at Comic Con. There's a Lawrence O'Donnell. There's Piers Morgan. And then they quietly, wow. like the Twilight ones that I saw, they quietly hand you their card, and they were available for parties.
Really? That would be awesome. I could be Edward. I could give you icy glares through the party and look constipated the entire time.
I bet anything there's an American Pie group cosplaying.
Yeah, some guy with somebody wearing an apple pie on his crotch.
Somebody's carrying a flute.
I will say this about American Pie. Like I said, having all the different characters, trying to give stories to everybody, and really pretty much Jim gets one, and Finch gets one, and Stifler gets one. Oz is kind of secondary, and Kevin's is very secondary, because he's the one, Kevin's the one with, I can only remember the actor, but the character's named Kevin, and he's with Tara Reid. Tara Reid, like, stumbles into her seat. She is, a hot mess, because she's, first of all, bizarrely shaped because of all the, like, body plastic surgery.
Yeah.
And I remember the second movie, she shows up and like Jim goes, when did she get so hot? I'm like, okay, I know she was anorexic and she's got body issues. You don't have to stroke her personal ego in the script itself. Why do you have to put that in there? So she shows and she's like sort of like stumbles on something, barely can deliver lines. Mm. I mean, I swear, her hair's covering her ear, but I wouldn't be surprised if she had a Bluetooth in there while people were feeding her lines through them, because she just is like, it is amazing. I mean, you know what I want to do? I hope that they make the next Hunger Games and they cast Lindsay Lohan and Tara Reid. One of them can dress as Peeta. And the other one can play Katniss, just to see what an absolute hot mess of a film that would be.
I'd love to see. Yeah, that's probably going to exist in another couple of weeks. Somebody will just make that, and they'll think they're making the actual Hunger Games movie, because they're so out of it all the time.
They don't have to tell them. They could just be like, yeah, there'll be cocaine there, really? Okay. And then just not have it there.
Exactly. Or you could always just throw them out there as actual tributes and let them in the movie. Yeah.
Because, like, Tara Reid's not even 40. She's in her 30s. And she can barely talk if she talks like this.
I don't know that I ever forgot, that I ever realized or had just completely forgotten it's her, that she's Bunny in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah. She looks great in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, and I was watching it, and it's like, Tara Reid is, and I was like, wait, what? I don't know that I had ever known that, you know, until, like, my fifth viewing or something.
Yeah. And now she looks like she's had cancer.
Yeah, it's...
But it's just plastic surgery and anorexia.
Yeah. It's too bad. I mean, I don't know that she was ever any kind of great talent. It's just kind of freaky to see somebody do that to themselves.
Yeah, I mean, she's never been a great actor, but I mean, talk about just going off the rails.
Yeah.
That was it, yeah. So, I mean, she's got like fake boobs that are bigger than her own hips. And it's not that her boobs are that big.
Yeah.
It's just her hips are so shocking.
Well, I know she had
tiny.
To get, like, her boobs redone several times because... Yeah, she got, like, cheap implants or something. And then, they're all... I think she had to even them out. And I don't know. I guess you have to kind of go bigger after that. You can't really go smaller.
No. There's... I've always said plastic surgery is the kind of thing. It's like putting salt in a soup. You can add it to make it taste a little bit better. But if you keep adding it, at some point, it's just going to taste like shit. And there's no way to take it out.
Yeah. So. You just have to dump the soup.
You have to just dump the soup, get rid of the body. So we're going to transplant Tara Reid's brain. You can pretty much transplant it into anything because it's not that big. Anyway, I've got a bit of a rant. I wanted to throw a rant in here. I don't think I put it in the original show notes. But I have to. There's something. A lot of people are ranting about hyperbole now. And being, what's funny about that is they're being hyperbolic with their rants about hyperbole, because their rants are basically the sense of you're ruining the entire world of cinema criticism with your hyperbole, and you're like, no, you're not.
No.
You just have people chasing quotes is what they're doing. They're trying to get their names on posters and. Mm-hmm. And DVD boxes.
Well, and writing, I don't know, on the verge of hysteria, writing snarky, writing, over... I mean, that's unfortunately the way everybody gets the quotes out there, gets noticed. I mean, calm, measured criticism or analysis is not exactly read or commented on, so of course everybody has to, throw the firecrackers into it.
And you know what's funny is most of the people who are writing those in order to get their name on a box... I hate to tell you, that is not actually how it's done. What happens is the studios have their favorite reviewers who they work at a TV station, sometimes it's just a local shitty TV station in nowhere, Iowa or whatever. But it happens to be an NBC affiliate, for example. And then they get them, they'll show them the movie earlier, invite them to a junket, and they'll just get a quote from them, a direct quote from them that they just manufacture.
Yeah.
And then they put that on the cover box, and then they say NBC TV. That is how it works.
Now, you don't get on Twitter and go on, they're not going to notice what you're saying.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens, and I've actually known people who've written reviews, and I once won Chase Whale from Gordon the Whale, when he was... Because I don't think Gordon the Whale's back, but I was watching a trailer, and I'm like, oh, hey, look, a Gordon the Whale quote, and I emailed him or I sent him a Twitter. He's like, really? I didn't even know it was in the trailer. So occasionally that stuff will show up.
Yeah.
But that's all for the smallest stuff.
They do pull. Yeah, they pull stuff at random out of reviews and stuff. I mean, I've heard people complain and also, geek out over, oh my God, I'm in there. Oh, wow. Yeah. Out of context.
But anyways, this rant isn't actually about hyperbole. I was just saying that most people are saying that that's what's causing hyperbole or that's what's causing problems. And what really I think is causing a problem in credibility, especially online journalists, I just have to say this. Look, if you're not going to see a movie or you haven't seen a movie, you don't have a right to trash it.
No.
Okay? So all you people out there that trash the Twilight movies, using that as an example, first of all, if you're going to rip upon them in a public setting... Just do the due diligence and watch the damn movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 hours out of your life. I mean, I think I had you on during the last Twilight. I don't think you had a chance to see it. And we were talking about it, but you weren't laying into it and you weren't writing pieces about it.
No, and it's, I find it, I've tried to criticize the culture around it because, I think one of the things that bothered me about, and, kind of goes right into that, is just, these people sort of wanting to protect female viewers from themselves. In a way, and that kind of bothers me. I don't care what movie it is, if it's a rom-com or whatever, or if I've seen it or not. It's like, no. I mean, you can analyze the movie, and if you've seen it and you have some thoughtful things to say, but don't sit there outside the movie theater and criticize people for going in to see it. I mean, that's just not... I don't know. There's just a level of that I find really creepy, because I don't exactly see people heaping on that kind of thing when, let's say, it's like a Michael Bay, tits explosion or something,
Tits explosion. What kind of movies is he making now? Holy cow.
I mean, it's
The utter comedy. No.
I mean, because I think there's elements of fandom and fanaticism for basically everything nowadays.
Everything.
And I don't, I think I even did a piece about this. Like, it's just time to stop hating on Twilight. It's such an easy target. So many of these things are easy targets. And I have met Harry Potter fans.
Well, it's run its course. That's the thing. I mean,
over. It's pretty.
We got one more movie, and I'll see it, and I'll probably hate it, but I will see it.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
Well, and
this
think
came
it's,
from.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that this stemmed from two articles, and I'll name check the source, and it's the folks at the Film Stage, and Jordan Raup. I do respect him for running the site and building for what it is. But you got to be careful not to dismiss things before they come out. Because it happened twice. One of them was an article about, I think it was about Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. Or it was about the host. I forget which one it was. But the writer's bragging about how he hasn't seen any of the Twilight movies and how they're total crap. And I'm like, no, you can't declare them crap until you see them. You may think they look like crap.
Yeah.
But don't brag about not having seen them. And the second thing he did, there was a story that broke... very recently, at the time of this recording, where Taylor Lautner is going to be in Grown Ups 2. And I don't know who wrote the article. It may have been Jordan, but it was. He basically said, he's like, I'm not even going to see this movie and it's going to suck. And I'm like, no, you don't get a... I mean, you can sit there and make fun of the casting news all you want because the movie's not out. But go see the movie and then rip on it. And then rip away. Have at it and go crazy. But don't declare it to be a shitty movie and never see it, because that's intellectually dishonest.
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially if something hasn't been made, we're getting... And it's easy. Again, it's so much easier to write snarky stuff. And I know I've done it, and I know pretty much everybody writing about the Three Stooges has done it.
Well, there's nothing wrong with doing snark.
We all kind of do that knee jerk. You know, this movie is gonna be terrible or whatever. But yeah, you can't really definitively say this movie is terrible.
Yeah,
you could say going to be.
Well, and the other thing is if you don't see the crap, mm-hmm. you don't have a baseline.
Yeah,
I meet people who want, are new reviewers, and the reviewers you get, the you mostly find new movie reviewers in the summer and in the winter, because they're going after the summer movie season, the big summer movies, because they want to get in and see the Avengers early, or they're at the tail end of the year because they want award screeners, or mm-hmm. they want to go see all the award movies before they come out. You never get people trying to break into criticism in September.
Or March.
When they can see Bangkok Dangerous with Nicolas Cage, you know. And the thing is, people, if you just watch the movies you want to see, you can't scale them right. You have to see the zero-star movies. And I'll bet you anything that Grown Ups 2 is going to be terrible, but I'll go see it. And like next week, Three Stooges, they're not screening it for press. And I will go see it, and I'll probably hate every goddamn minute of it, but at least I can then have an informed decision, be informed about it. But don't pretend like you know movies and then say, oh, I don't even need to see that, I know I'm going to hate it. No.
Well, it's kind of, I do find it really interesting, the whole press screening thing, when they don't screen it. I mean, because you're making the decision for everybody. I mean, I always find that interesting. It's like, I admire reviewers who go out of their way on a Friday morning or a Saturday morning to go see it and review it, because it's like, wow, the studio does not care, right? Mm-hmm. You should be commended, Kevin.
Well, I mean, like, for example, I didn't go see Titanic.
They don't want you to slam or endorse it. They don't even care.
They don't. Yeah.
They're like, well, yeah, this movie's terrible. We're just telling you now.
Well, you know what's funny is I can track my reviews, and the studios do hit my reviews. Mm-hmm. I do see it every now and then, and it's, I'll be like, oh, Paramount just went to my review of a movie they didn't screen, yet they're curious about what I had to say about that.
That's kind of nice.
It's nice to see, you know, and it's. I saw Mirror Mirror. Didn't like Mirror Mirror. I'm going to go see Three Stooges next week. I probably will hate it. But that means that when you see a great movie, you can be like, you know it was great.
It's, you know, otherwise it's true. You'll be like, I mean, you don't appreciate the... And I mean, it's... I had just recently read, and I reviewed it, the Tales from Development Hell book. It kind of made the rounds a lot, as far as the blogs and stuff. And
saw somebody with that last night. Yeah, they were...
It's really kind of funny, because it's like, you realize, I mean, and you watch these movies get made into real, you know, develop into just awful, awful movies and then die, you know? Yeah. And it's one of those things, like, you really, and it's the same token as bad movies that actually get made. You have to appreciate and admire the good stuff that actually makes it through the gauntlet.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean.
Because it takes a lot of work to make a terrible movie.
It's true. Or, I guess, no work at all. I mean, because it was just... If some of the stories from, say, Evil Watch, we'll get a bunch of crap, but Cop-Out are true. It just sounds like, you know, a certain somebody just smoked a lot of weed and didn't directing.
But, I mean, just to shoot a movie and assemble it and have everybody show up, that's working days, and you may be high off your ass as you're doing it end-to-end, which Kevin Smith probably was. But... I mean, even then, that's a lot of work. Because I've worked on independent films, and I've worked on independent films where you're busting your ass for 16 hours a day, and then you get the movie, and you're just like, it looks like somebody just shat on a DVD and put it in the, and you're like, you just ruined my DVD player because there's poop all over this. Oh, it's the movie.
Great.
No, so that's my rant. If you're gonna trash it, yeah, if you're gonna trash a movie, you have to have seen it.
Well, I guess, you know, somebody, there were some people that were kind of, I wrote a sort of hyperbole piece on Dark Shadows, and I'm not going to say I'm not seeing Dark Shadows, but, you know,
yeah.
it was kind of fun to make this retroactive, like, oh, I hate this movie, and I haven't seen it, and I hate everything Johnny Depp's done now, and I hate, you know, and I didn't intend it seriously, but people, that was immediately the response of a few people in the comments of, like, how can you say these things, and, yeah. We're not. It's not always serious, and I mean, we are supposed to. I mean, that is kind of a funny thing about the position you and I and all of us writers are in, is that we do have to make judgment calls on trailers and stills and things.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what sadly we have to post and kind of write some analysis or whatever. And people, you know, you shouldn't judge it before you see it. I'm not. I'm just.
There's a difference between saying, does the trailer interest me or not?
I'm putting words with the trailer so that I have something to post.
And I can't tell you how many times I've seen a trailer and been like, oh, that's going to suck.
Yeah.
And then I'll go see Morning Glory is a great example. I saw the trailer, I wanted to stab myself in the face. And then I saw the movie, and it wasn't a great movie, but it was a cute movie.
Yeah.
It was worth seeing, you know. And then there's movies that you think just look just end-to-end awesome, and then, like, Sky Captain, mm-hmm. and The World of Tomorrow, and then you see the movie, and you go, that was not good.
No. In fact, there's one of our DVD picks that has an incredible trailer, and not such a great movie.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to hire the guy that cut the trailer to make the movie. Hey, why don't you make a movie, sir?
Yeah, exactly.
you have an eye for emotion and plot and tension. What have you got? Got any screenplays
exactly.
lying around?
Exactly. Real quick, one more thing I want to hit on is we were talking about this during the break, and it just was such a funny, bizarre conversation before we got into it. We had a discussion about rabies and how rare rabies actually is in the United States.
It's very
rare.
It's
like there's something like over the course of the last 15 years, there have been like 45 cases of rabies or 46 cases of rabies. 9 of them were people who were traveling to foreign countries coming back. So like between 30 and 40 cases of rabies in the last 15, 20 years, statistically is nothing. And I made the comment, I said, you have a greater chance of being raped by a dolphin than...
And I thought this was hyperbole. See, I tied it in.
Yeah, you thought it was... But it's absolutely true, because like every year, something like 12 or 15 people are raped by dolphins. Dolphins are one of the few animals that engage in intraspecies or interspecies rape. Which is it's like orangutans too. And we're telling the story about how Julia Roberts was almost raped by an orangutan.
And I thought you were making this up as, again, hyperbole.
True
You're
story.
You're like, oh, orangutans will rape you. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You're just stringing words together to make a shocking sentence.
But it's true. If you're to believe the internet at all, that's actually true. So dolphins and orangutan, horny bastards. So you know.
Yeah.
Cover yourself.
If you're in the jungles of Borneo, as I'm sure many of you will be.
don't tempt the orangutans into the Borneo. Dude, you're swimming with the dolphins. Don't swim too sexy. Yeah. I'm not saying you're asking for it, but dolphin rape, you know, in the throes of it, there's no one to blame but the dolphin. And even then, maybe they know something we don't, because apparently they're smarter.
Well, you know, you have to call them with those whistles that nobody hears.
the rape whistle? Oh, no, the different whistle.
Maybe, yeah, there's all those whistles going off. I don't know.
Well, and this is the thing, apparently, because one of the things with dolphins, I mean, I love dolphins. I think they're fascinating creatures.
And my checks have orangutans on them because I'm an advocate for orangutan rescue.
Orangutans. Your checks are dangerous. Don't make sure you close the checkbook before you... You know, the whole A cup thing. Anyways, let's. But with the dolphins, there's an evolutionary thing that just happened with their mouths that make them look like they're smiling. I hate to tell you, dolphins don't smile. They just look like they're smiling. And apparently, cetaceans, which are the entire family of
whales.
Animals, including killer whales and that sort of thing, they can be real assholes sometimes. They will sometimes murder porpoises. Did you know this?
Yes, I did know
dolphins,
this.
Dolphins will murder porpoises. There's that killer whale that killed somebody.
Yeah, a trainer.
Yeah, and it's and it was funny with that
trainers, if I remember right, like
yeah, it's sort of like when John Denver died in a car a plane crash, and I remember hearing
and
on
then
the radio,
planes
like,
started killing folks.
Yeah, planes started killing and raping people. No, so when John Denver crashed, and I remember hearing a report on the radio, it goes, well, he was involved in two minor crashes beforehand, and I'm like. Next time you're on an airplane, do you want to hear that the pilot was involved in two minor crashes?
Yeah.
You want to know that they had no crashes. Not even minor. And so I'm like, well, that was just...
experimental aircraft. I think that's kind of what they meant. But there was sort
John
of
Denver
like a,
did?
Yeah.
John Denver, he wasn't Hal Jordan.
No,
what are you talking about?
Because he was like really into... he's a Colorado like god, so we know these things.
Rocky Mountain High.
But yeah, he... there's actually a huge monument to him in Aspen.
Really?
Yeah, like rocks engraved with like the songs and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, but
Was he with flying experimental? Because the whole thing
yeah,
is,
yeah, he
is
was
I'm
like he liked yeah. From what I understand, he was flying like you know alternative fuel planes and stuff like that. He was big on like you know.
When you run out of fuel, went under a cloud, and those solar panels just cut right out.
Yeah, I guess
he's like,
terrible.
I wish I had a backup.
But no, that was so minor crashes are probably due to it being him being Hal Jordan, which if you think about the songs of John Denver, if I was gonna give out a ring, if I was Evan Sewer, I'd probably like hear that.
Like, it was 9 feet tall and 6 feet wide and soft as a downy chick. Bark, bark. That's who gets the ring.
Hey, have you ever heard Sunshine on My Shoulders? I think he's one of our deities in Colorado. We can't,
one of
you
the
know.
Colorado
we actually did
deities.
Give him the ring, so the keys to the city. We gave him our name. Dang it!
Wow.
Because he's, you know, he was John. Was it Dusseldorf? Or
he was John Dusseldorf?
No,
he was named after a city of Germany, and he said, "Nope, city in Colorado.
No,
that's what I want."
No, he had a really like big German name, but it's not
Dusseldorf. It was John Farfenugen.
It kind of was something like that. Oh, I should remember. If it wasn't 3 a.m, I'd probably know. Because I think it's the little twin. It's the twins that played Baby Oscar in Ghostbusters 2 are actually his like nephew.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So if you look them up, you'll have their real name.
Okay. Well, you know, with that, let's move on. We've got a voicemail here, and this is from our good friend Thomas from Seattle. I'm going to play it because I don't know if you can hear it. I'm going to try and pipe it through the sound, and we can respond to it. So here's the voicemail.
Hey, Kevin, this is Thomas from Seattle. I just listened to your podcast about Wrath of the Titans, and I kudos to your kids. You did a really good job. Anyway, it seems like the movie isn't any better, and it seems like most people are saying that it's worse than the previous Clash of the Titans from 2 years ago. And I remember in the last 2 years, Sam Worthington has been giving a lot of talk to, like, the movie geek crowd, I guess, saying that, oh, we'll do it better this time, we're going to do it better this time. We heard you. We realized we made some mistakes with the first one, and we're going to do it better. And it didn't seem like they did. And I'm just wondering if when Sam Worthington, quote-unquote, talks to the fans, is that just a bunch of lip service to get a good blog post here and there? And I just wanted to know your opinion on that, because it doesn't seem like anything happened with what he was saying. Anyway, enjoy the show. Thomas from Seattle. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, you know, that's actually been the sort of... And Worthington was probably hopping on the tail end of it, because that was sort of a trend of movie marketing for a while there, because Johnny Depp did it with Pirates 4... You know, and again, Pirates 4 ended up not being that great, kind of like Wrath of the Titans, which I haven't seen, but I understand is.
Yeah, I liked Pirates 4 better, but
yeah,
the difference being Pirates 4 made $1 billion.
Yeah,
not here, but
what was the and there was somebody else who did that. Johnny Depp was like the second one. I'm trying to remember who was the first actor to kind of hop on it. But a couple of actors did it at the same time, like, you know, and directors, and it got kind of ridiculous. Like, we know the last one wasn't good, so we're going to do it, you know. And I think it's lip service. It's kind of, Drew McWeeny on HitFix actually did a big piece about it, about, you know, I can't, you're basically saying that the movie was crap, and how am we supposed to believe it since you told us that one was good too, you know?
I know Spielberg came out and trashed Indy 4.
Okay, there you go, Indy 4, that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Shia LaBeouf, you know, kind of trashed it too, and... I think the only one that was convinced it was good was Lucas and Harrison Ford.
I liked Indy 4. Well, I think...
I don't know what this is Indy 4 that you're talking about. I don't even know.
I always talk about that. Yeah. I always have to defend that movie.
Yeah, I know.
Here's my thought. First of all, no one ever accused Sam Worthington of knowing a good movie if it came in and bit him in the ass. I mean, he's an actor.
Yeah.
And the actors, what an actor judges as a good movie or a good TV show, it means actors are very narcissistic, and they think just about themselves and just about their part. And you ask Sam Jackson if he thinks Deep Blue Sea is a great movie, he's like, yes, it's a fantastic movie till I die, and then I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, and so a lot of actors will focus on just their piece. And also, so if you've got a lot of stuff going on, if there's a lot of meat to work with a character, but it doesn't fit in the movie, the actor may love it, but it may be awkward and bizarre and strange. Also, the actors are not the directors and they're not the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sam Worthington, he could very well believe it did better, that they did a better job, but what the hell does he know? Because he didn't... And I don't blame him for Wrath of the Titans being softer than the first one, because he played his role, and he was as good or as bad as I expected him to be.
Well, I think too, it's and I remember seeing it particularly with somebody's roll their eyes because I've brought this movie up a lot, but I remember seeing it with Jonah Hex, where Josh Brolin basically came out and was like, by the way, I was like forced to promote it and it's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Like, if I could have told you that when it was in theaters, I would have. And it was kind of weird because it's like, is he saying that, you know, now because all the reviews come out and everyone's saying it's a bad movie, so he's like, oh yeah, I always knew it was, but I was contractually obligated to promote the film, you know? Because, I mean, if they do. I don't think they're allowed to just go out and trash a movie unless they're making Rourke, you know? And, well, there you go.
Well,
Robert Downey Jr.'s done that with Iron Man. Like, Iron Man 2 came out, and, I mean, he was, you know, really, you know, pro-Iron Man 2, and then all of a sudden, you know, Iron Man 3 is getting, well, Iron Man 2 sucked, so we're going to do a better job on Iron Man 3, and it's like, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a new trend.
It's a real trend, and I think they are responding to what, it's lip service to fans, I think. I mean, they're saying, oh yeah, we listened to you and we made it better, but they know very well they... It's the same process that it always is, and maybe the film turns out, and maybe it doesn't.
It's so easy to, in retrospect, then just trash a movie, and I think it's intellectually dishonest for the filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Spielberg with Indy 4, you're the damn director. Don't tell me that, oh, that wasn't a good idea. You're the damn director. You know, you went through how many different versions of the script and then approved this one. So take some fucking ownership on it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that is something, I mean, you can basically admit, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with, well, at the time it seemed like a good idea, but now that I've seen it a couple times, I realize I made mistakes. I mean, we all learn and grow, and you realize the film is good, or maybe realize the film is bad. I mean, there is some distance involved that I can kind of excuse out of a, you know, a director or an actor, like, well, once I got, you know, past the hype of making that movie, wow, it really didn't turn out as well as it was in my head. And I think you kind of, you know, smooth over rough bits in your mind too when you wrote something or you made something. But yeah, it's just dishonest. Like, you need to admit that you made it. I mean, I made those mistakes.
I mean, even for somebody, like, take for example Jake Lloyd, who played Anakin Skywalker in episode one. He has since come out and just tore apart in episode one, how, you know, he has a lot of negative things to say about it. Oh, he has no problem going to conventions and making money on it, but you know, he does. And I think, and there's a minor degree where you can be like, well, you were just a kid and you didn't know.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're just like, no, you were not a good actor, and you were picked for this role over thousands of other boys, and you did not do a good job, whether or not you were directed well by Lucas. But you know what? Don't sit there. Don't trash it just because it's popular to trash it, because it makes you sound
like you're too young. He was too young. I mean, other than, you know, that he got his feelings, and I do remember that he was really hurt. And it's terrible. I mean, it's this little kid. I mean, if he was in a school, we all like rushed to defend him or something.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, I mean, if you're making money off it, you either disown it completely or you embrace it and be like, I don't think.
Or have some honesty
bad.
About.
Yeah.
Have some honesty about when you do it. Like I know a radio guy I work with. He interviewed Chris Kattan about the movie Delgo. Starts asking questions, and Chris Kattan's like, "Dude, I just did this movie because it was a kids' movie, and I wanted my kids to see it."
Yeah.
And he takes no. And from the get go, he's not. I mean, he wasn't trashing it, but he's just like, was not involved in. Whereas I think that what Sam Worthington his thing with this is a little different in the sense that. If you look at what a lot of people complained about Clash of the Titans, the first one, they did improve. The 3D, probably the thing that was single-handedly most complained about with the remake of Clash of the Titans was the 3D conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a far, far better job. Maybe it was just because technology's gotten better and people have gotten used to the technology to make a better 3D conversion 2 years later. But
that one was really rushed. Didn't they do that in like a week or 2 weeks or something? It was crazy short time. I mean,
it was fast and it was not well done. But I'll tell you, the 3D in the 3D is not the problem of Wrath of the Titans.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I don't necessarily blame Sam Worthington.
Well,
I think people,
You know, people didn't like Clash, and I mean, I don't know if Worthington acknowledges that. It's like there was a lot of, you know, it wasn't as good as the original because I mean the original is just a. You know.
Well, the original's goofy as shit.
I know, it is. It's like, and I wrote a piece on Wrath last week, and people were like, oh, I was going to attack you for saying the original was bad, but you're right. It's like, you know, it's okay. We all liked it when we were kids. In retrospect, it's kind of dumb.
it's dorky and silly, and there's parts that just make no sense. But yeah, there is that sort of 80s nostalgia.
So it's like, you know,
anything
that came out that wasn't, I don't know, nobody was ever going to like Clash of the Titans.
Yeah,
it would have to have been like, I don't know, a 300, and it really just wasn't.
Yeah. So that answers Thomas's question. Next one, we have a listener feedback. This is from Ty from St. Louis, and we talked about this. Me and Meryl Barr talked about this on the Idiot Boxers, and he had sent this in for Fat Guys, so that's why I'm bringing it up to you. We're not going to read the whole thing because it's a pretty long email, but it's basically the point is that he's about as old as I am, a couple years younger, and he's talking about 21 Jump Street and how they made it into a comedy, and he's asking about the trend of that happening and why are so many of them, stuff like Starsky and Hutch, which were relatively serious shows,
mm-hmm.
Dark Shadows being another great example coming up, these relatively serious shows that are now getting comedy treatments later on, and how he as the little line he goes, Tim Burton's vision for Dark Shadows makes me want to puke. I'm very tired of the Burton-Depp love affair we've been subjected to. But he also points out movies like Mission Impossible and Lost in Space were not made comedy movies, and they did well for what, and maybe Lost in Space wasn't a huge hit, but the Mission Impossible series certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a little thing at the end. This is interesting. He goes, P.S. I actually met a woman who worked on the actual New York operations the 21 Jump Street show is based on. She was more administrative, but said it was really. But she said it really sucked to be undercover officers. They had to do their own homework and get decent grades on top of all the police paperwork they had to wade through. Anyways, so yeah, that would suck.
And they had to do algebra all over again.
Yeah, exactly. Another one he mentions that was not done in a comedy. That was a good movie, was The Fugitive. So what do you think? Why do you think we're getting so many comedies remakes?
You know, I think it's because it's, you know, ultimately these things are cashing in on, and I haven't seen 21 Jump Street, and I really wanted to. Mm. So I think you can kind of exclude that one because I think there was just such an awareness of the source material being, like you said on Golden Briefcase, kind of inherently just ridiculous.
Mm.
But I think because they're cashing in on the... on the name recognition, and I think there's just, it's the easy thing to do. You know, it's like, oh man, Starsky and Hutch was so dorky, and we thought it was cool. Let's make it, you know, a movie, but we'll acknowledge how dorky the show was. I think that's just the easy approach to it, as opposed to making, a serious version. And I think also there's just kind of a, I don't know, an aversion to going, well, I'm going to make a serious Starsky and Hutch movie. I mean, I think you could probably do it, but there's just something about taking them out of, like, their time and place that just, I don't know, you know, could you really, I think you could, but I think people kind of reluctant, like, it automatically feels weird to make a serious Starsky and Hutch movie, or,
well, I think, you know, if you did it, like, Starsky and Hutch is a great example. If you did a real serious Starsky and Hutch movie, it'd just be another cop movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's like, you know, other than the name, what is it, you're not really adding to it, and I think they, you know, in a way, there's also, they, people think they're being really clever to deconstruct it, you know, like Starsky and Hutch. And
I think 21 Jump Street would have ended up, if you did a 21 Jump, part of 21 Jump Street is it, even though it was a real thing, it's a ludicrous premise.
Yeah.
When you hear it, and if you go watch the original show, it's so goofy anyways.
Just no more omelets for breakfast.
Yeah. It's just so bizarre.
I still laugh about that.
But yeah, this one is, so it cashes in on itself. I think one of the first movies that really did that, deconstructing the original film, was the Brady Bunch movie back in the 90s, early 90s. I'm not talking about when the Brady's become president, but the first one. Whereas if I remember watching the Brady Bunch in the 70s, and it was a comedy, but it was still, it was told
straight. It was a straight face, yeah. Whereas,
yeah.
I mean, that one was, really a weird movie because, they kept, I mean, they went on a whole surreal thing of that these people are still stuck in the 70s, and he designs every building to look just like their, I mean, it was weird. Like, when you go back and I actually thought the sequel was hilarious because of its weird Gilligan's Island tie-in, and I thought that was actually really clever. In a weird meta way. But it's probably, like, if I went back and watched it, I'd probably be like, that's dumb, you know? But,
yeah, and I think, and that worked because the premise of the show is so, it'd be like making an Ozzy and Harriet movie.
Yeah.
You couldn't do it straight, because then it would just be uninteresting. But to make it sort of that anachronism and the weirdness,
I think it's
Starsky and Hutch, but
yeah, I mean, I think it's an easy thing to do. I think that's really what it is. Like, Starsky and Hutch is the same. Well, no, that is all set in the 70s, isn't it? Like, it's sort of, I don't know, it's almost like it has no time and place. It's like everybody dresses 70s, and there's the disco sequence, but then there's also, like, the rest of the cops seem really modern.
Yeah. Well, there were a series in the 2000s. There was a string of adaptations that didn't make it, like SWAT.
Yeah, the Mod Squad.
The Mod Squad from the and then Meryl had mentioned, when you take, like, Charlie's Angels, which it wasn't necessarily a comedy read, but it was a little more, it was a little more out there. It was a little more of a cartoon than the original show. Those are actually, even the second one is, even though the second one's lame, it's still better than that shitty TV show they tried. Yeah. And they tried that shitty TV show straight, and it just flopped. Not because a good Charlie's Angels adaptation wouldn't work. It's because it was a shitty show.
Yeah. So. It's so weird because, I mean, it is such a weird thing to take because, I mean, these things were iconic and they were cool at the time. And I don't know why, we feel like this need to, like, laugh. Oh, my God, it was so dorky. And it's like, but in the 70s, it wasn't. And in the 80s, it wasn't. And it is weird that we constantly take that approach to it. And I think it is. It's just because it's easy and it's easier to make fun of it. And
it's easier to attach a big comedy.
Yeah, and you can, you can hook, I mean, because the older crowd would go see, like, a straight adaptation of something, but the younger crowd wants to go and make fun of their parents, which is really what those movies are kind of doing. And with Dark Shadows is a weird one because it's like the show was, they didn't at least, I don't know, I've heard different things about whether or not they intended it to be campy. I know that was a lot of the appeal for people. I
think
know.
They were just more, they were constrained by the daytime production.
Yeah.
There were, especially in the 60s when you're shooting live for television, it just, you couldn't, it had to, it plays as camp, it plays as true camp where it wasn't intentional.
Yeah. I feel like, the obviously that was what Johnny Depp thought and Tim Burton thought was funny about it, but I think adapting it that way, you didn't have Barnabas Collins watching TV and saying, stuff about the tiny songstress. I mean, it was just dumb. I mean, I think they took the, I think doing a straight approach would have, of course, been the typical Tim Burton way, but I think it would have been better.
They're not killing any sacred cows for me.
Yeah, I don't.
Goofing
I
on,
don't know.
On Dark Shadows, but I would have preferred to. I would have liked to have seen what they did with a serious version.
Yeah, I think that's more what it is. It's not like I'm really, you know, deeply attached to it or anything, but I'm curious. Yeah, what it would have been like, and it you know, there is a sexy premise there, and it's kind of like, wow, you guys really threw that out the window to kind of. And I don't even care if they said it in the 70s. I think that might have even been kind of funky and. Because there's a claustrophobia there with gothic horror and Hammer horror that's really appealing to me, and yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I do think that when it comes to, in particular, Dark Shadows, you cannot discount the Twilight phenomenon as influencing this decision. I could see Johnny Depp and Tim Burton being like, "Look, we can't do a straight vampire, because we're gonna be fighting against Twilight the entire time,
yeah.
So if we just go off the rails." No one's going to refer to this as I don't think anyone has breathed Twilight and Dark Shadows in the same breath when they're talking about this trailer, which means I guess they did their job on
that. Yeah, but it could also be because Twilight was running its course, and I feel like Tim Burton and Johnny Depp are so far outside of... I mean, while like there's, you know, pop culture and critics would be like, well, Twilight... audiences probably... I mean, he's just so known for gloomy, gothy... horror, romantic bodice rippers type of stuff that I don't know that it, you know, people just would have flocked to, you know, would probably eaten it up. In fact, I think Tim Burton is probably getting too well known for going, totally whimsical and wacky, and so is Johnny Depp. It's like, you know, if you guys went serious, that might have actually been more surprising at this point. And you know, True Blood is actually. You know, I mean, True Blood manages to survive despite Twilight, and they sort of have a blend of seriousness and camp that kind of works and makes it its own thing, despite that it's very Twilighty, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's weird. It was a weird decision, because I feel like that's the problem with Burton and Depp in general, is that it feels too much like their own in-joke. I think that's what's really unappealing about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and yet they're trying so hard to make it appealing to us, and it's like, it's not funny, guys. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like the people who stand in the office and are telling you jokes, like, isn't it funny though, and you're like, to you,
yeah, quit laughing at your own jokes kind of thing. We got to move on because we're almost out of time here, but let's just burn through the Fat Guy Five. We're just going to list these because I don't really think we need to analyze these movies all that much. These are five.
Except for the one I shocked you with that I hadn't seen.
Yeah. Well, and I do want to throw in the honorable mention at the end. Yeah. But these are five good fourth movies, which is inspired by The American Reunion. Not to say that that's a great fourth movie, but it's tough to come up with a list of fourth movies that were good. First one is Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. I think that series in general has been consistent. X-Men First Class, which even though it's a prequel, it's the fourth X-Men movie they made, so that was good. Thunderball, even though it's not my favorite James Bond movie, it's one of the highest grossing ones. And this is the one you shocked me on.
Yeah, it is. I've never seen it. I've seen three James Bond movies in my entire life, and Thunderball's apparently not one of them.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to, when Skyfall comes out, I'm going to have this summer. I told my son that we're going to watch all 22 James Bond movies in order over the course of like 3 or 4 days. And he thinks that's the most awesome thing ever. So
maybe I should join you. I don't. It's weird because it's like I've recommended it to people. Like maybe I should watch all of them. People are like, no, don't. And it's like, oh.
Oh
really?
No, there's some. It's an interesting experiment to watch them all. I've done it before. I took longer time, but when I was writing for Film Thread, I did this. I watched them all and did this whole thing on it.
Yeah,
Die Another Day.
It's weird. I've only seen Dr. No and Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace. So
really bookended it there, didn't
you? Yeah,
you,
I'm like, I'll just see the first Bond and the last Bond. I don't care about the ones in the middle.
The next one is Live Free or Die Hard, which I actually thought was better than the third one in terms of movies. And then Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which was one of the best movies of last year. The honorable mention is Star Wars, the original. Because even though it was the first one made, it is the fourth movie. So I'm going to throw that in. And I also liked episode one, too. So, sue me.
And suddenly a bunch of nerds do. They find a legal loophole and do.
I get summons tomorrow. So, all right. Well, we got to go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to do DVDs. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We have had a long marathon segment here with Elizabeth Rapp. Gotten some crazy stuff in the last segment. Yeah. Talked about TV shows and remakes and gave a Fat Guy 5 about the best fourth movies. And we talked about Clash of the Titans and Wrath of the Titans and what Sam Worthington knows about anything. We also talked about other inappropriate stuff that just go find it. Trust me, it's worth listening to. But yeah, so we also did a more in-depth review of American Reunion, so you can go check that out if you're on the radio. So go to fatguysinthemovies.com. Now, what do we have coming up now?
The world famous DVD roundup.
Yeah. There we go. That's right. See, I got a real app for that one now.
Yeah. Is there a whip crack app? Like that's all it does.
It's called Pocket Whip. Yes, and I saw it on The Big Bang Theory.
Okay, I'm gonna go get that app.
It's awesome. It's just Pocket Whip. That is it. And that's all it does.
I mean, because I can think of pretty much every day that I need that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny is they have a buy version for like 99 cents. What do you need?
Like the full version for
whip sound? Yeah. What do you need to pay 99 cents for the full, licensed, no ads version of Pocket Whip? I have no idea. Anyways, a couple DVDs to hit on. We've got We Bought a Zoo with Matt Damon and Scarlett Johansson.
And it's not it's not the story of my life, by the way. It's not the story of my zoo.
You're working on it, though.
I'm working on it.
One animal at a time. this one came out at Christmas and, kind of came and went. It kind of flew under the radar because it was one of those open on Christmas Day when not a whole lot of things were actually opening on Christmas Day. There's also Being Elmo, which is the documentary about the guy who is Elmo. And there's Titanic, the original Titanic, which was made in the 40s, I think. That hits Blu-ray today. But there's another one that you wanted to mention as well.
It's War Horse.
War Horse. did you like War Horse? Was that the one you were mentioning earlier in the show where you said, well, there's one that said the trailer
was better than what War Horse actually was. Like, that trailer, I was like, this movie is going to rip out my heart, and it's going to molar ram it. It's going to show it to me before I cry.
I love the fact that you made a verb out of molar ram from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, but and then I saw the movie, and I was like, meh. Yeah.
See, I thought the exact opposite. When I watched the trailers, they were eye rollers for me, the trailers. And because I just was like, this looks stupid. This looks ridiculous. And then I saw the movie.
You're like, stupid horse running through war. What is it now?
Dumb horse. What's his problem? Just run away. But then I saw the movie, and I actually really dug it. I thought, first of all, it's beautiful looking. It's a great cinema.
Oh, I didn't hate it. I was just surprised that, and I think the trailer doesn't sell it that way. It sells it so much more of a David Lean thing, whereas it's kind of more of a kid's movie. And if I'd known that going in, I would have been like, oh, okay, you know.
It's an uplifting, it's a relatively uplifting story for a war, and for how many people actually get killed in it.
Yeah.
It is very uplifting.
I don't want to spoil anything, but there was a character, I took my mom to see it, and there was a character, and we get like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes further into the movie, maybe a half hour, and she's like, where is that character? And I'm like, I don't think he made it, Mom. it was kind of odd, because I thought it was very obvious, but...
Well, some characters get killed, because it does take place during World War I, and it's the story of this horse, and of it going from being owned by a person... And then getting in the British Army. I mean, it didn't enlist. I mean, it's not like
they drafted him. Well, this is gonna be college credit. Protesting. I mean, it's kind of like Born on the 4th of July, but
he accidentally shoots somebody. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry." No, but it's him being then, commandeered by the army and going through World War One and just kind of going through
scene. Because horses don't have rights. I don't know if people realize this.
Well, and also like when there was the enemy, it's not like the Germans were out to kill the horses. They're just killing. They were killing the enemy, and if the horses ran away, they're like, well, he's not a spy. He's not going to sell state secrets. But I really enjoyed it. It was one of my favorite movies of last year. Surprising to me. But it is somewhat of a more, it's a softer story. It's not a brutal, bloody
war
film.
Well, I mean, it was, I had it on my top 10 too, because it is very much like, if you ever read, like, you know, if you were a kid that read horse books, like Marguerite Henry's horse, you know, Misty of Shinkatique and stuff. It's a lot like that. And I think that's the thing that kind of, like, it's very like what the Disney specials is actually what my mom compared to, like Lassie Come Home and some of those. Like, that's the really more of the tone where I was expecting something a little more intense, like a little more mature about, like, war and the toll it takes. I didn't expect, like, so many jolly, like, oi, that horse has bonded us all. Like, that kind of. and it was so. I was kind of.
Tiny Tim comes stumbling into the film.
Well, I don't know that. The English kid kind of was Tiny Tim-esque because he's like, you know, Joey, that's me, horse. I'm blind.
Yeah.
You know, I could spot it from a mile away. but yeah, but it is beautiful, and there's some really. I mean, the last half is probably the best half, and it's worth
long,
seeing.
But
yeah.
I'd say it's definitely worth checking out. We do got to move on and talk about the stinker, and that's Angel's Crest, which was just a dumb movie about an idiot parent who lets his kid get killed. So don't bother watching that one. They're in the review wrap-up. American Reunion, I said, kind of rocks, and you didn't get a chance to see it, but you've of course seen Titanic. I said Titanic rocks. You said Titanic.
I'd say it rocks. I mean, it's pretty iconic.
Cool. And then next week we'll be talking about Cabin in the Woods, Lockout, and the Three Stooges. anyways, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com. Real quick, 15 seconds, give your information.
I'm at film.com and the Spectator Arts blog, and Twitter at Elizabeth Rapp.
With an
S.
All right. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for being on the show, and we will talk to you in a couple months, I'm sure.
Yep. Thank you for having me.